Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Red Light Podcast Redux. I'm your host, Gina Savage. I want to welcome the WROM radio listeners in Detroit, internet users worldwide. I say that every week because I can't put two words together. Worldwide subscribers to the Red Light Podcast on iTunes and Podomatic. I'm joined today with a very funny lady that I've known for at least 3-4 years now. I'm going to give you I'm going to give everybody a list of your credits because they are quite a few now. Since I've known you, you've really amassed. You've been working it. All right. So you've been named one of the top 5 comics to watch from CBS.com, right? You're the winner of the Hoboken Comedy Festival. You've been seen on Fox, TLC, Gotham's Access TV, Gotham Live, right?
Yeah.
Okay. You have your own show at Caroline's.
Yeah.
All right. And that's like a woman's...
It's Ladies' Night with Robin Shaw.
Ladies' Night with Robin Shaw. And Dumbbells.
Dumbbells, which is a web series I do with comedian Emma Willman.
And so let me welcome to the program, and you guys welcome the very funny Robin Shaw.
Yay!
Yay! 3 people in our red room. All right.
Hello. So, thank you for having me.
I'm very happy that
and
you're
in Detroit.
Here. And Detroit.
Hello, Detroit.
I think I was in Detroit once. I need to get back to Detroit.
I want to go perform in Detroit.
Well, now they'll know you even more.
Yeah,
now.
Detroit. Tell your comedy clubs you want Robin Shaw.
We'll hook that up. We can do that.
All right, great.
We will do that. So welcome.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so let's talk about. I like to just get into
just
the
get
nitty.
Into it.
Gritty.
Go ask anything. You could ask anything.
New Yorker, obviously.
Born and raised.
What part?
From Long Island. Now I live in Manhattan.
Okay. And we'll talk about your apartment a little bit later because you got the cutest apartment. But so and it's just when you look at your website, which is robinshaw.com, you talk about, you know, being a heavy kid.
Fat. I was fat. I wasn't heavy. I was just fat.
You talk about being a fat kid, and you wore leg braces.
And I wore leg braces like Forrest Gump.
Now, okay.
Look, I was born to be a comedian.
You were born, but see, not everybody would think that. Some people would take that on, and it would not be the comedic outcome,
right?
So what happened? Why were you wearing the leg
braces?
So
I have a bone disease called Perthes.
Okay.
Perthes, not herpes, in case there's any guys interested. it's Perthes. It's a bone disease. And your bone deteriorates till there's nothing there.
Oh, my
so
God.
So I wore leg braces. I was in, I had lots and lots of surgeries and blah, blah, blah.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it was a lot.
And you're a kid.
Kid, I'd say all the way from six. I was in and out of hospitals between 6 and 12 and 13-ish.
That is a lot to overcome at 6.
Yeah, and because of that, because I was so inactive, I got fatter and fatter and fatter because I wasn't moving around. And I come from a Jewish family where the mom just, oh, you're in pain? Here's cake.
Yes.
Oh, you have to have surgery? Here's a donut. That's how they make you feel better.
Oh, yeah. I'm Jewish. I remember one time my grandmother fed, we were at some family dinner and we were stuffed. We were already stuffed and I'm laying on the floor. I'm literally, I'm writhing. I like to use the word writhing.
Yeah.
I'm writhing. And she's like, do you want something else to eat? I'm writhing.
Right.
Okay, so that's, I totally get the whole Jewish thing.
So I just got fatter and fatter, and so I was a really big kid, teen, early 20s.
All right, so that couldn't, all right.
even once I was able to be physically active, at that point I was just fat and it was fine.
Now, fat and happy though.
Yeah, I was always
because
happy.
Because not fat and miserable, which some people...
Because I always had this theory, either you're a fat bitch or you're a jolly fat person. And I always wanted to be a jolly fat person. I didn't want to be a fat bitch.
Okay. Although the way you make it sound, it sounds kind of fun. I could have been a fat bitch.
She's such a fat bitch. Or they'll be like, oh, she's so jolly and fat. I just wanted to be jolly and fat.
Okay. That's good. But your parents could have been obviously they were amazingly supportive.
They were. My parents are great.
Because your confidence level.
Yeah, my parents, like, from the second I was diagnosed, they kind of didn't see this as, like, a handicapped at all. Like they took me and my brother still horseback riding and skiing and anything. I was on softball team. They didn't see this as, like, at least they didn't make me feel like I was handicapped. It was like, all right, you have to wear leg brace. Okay, you have to have surgery. Okay, you have to go to the hospital. It wasn't, like, a big deal. It was just like,
right.
It was like, that was my childhood. It wasn't something different. It was,
yeah, they didn't single you out.
No, they really didn't. It didn't seem like, now as an adult, I realized what a big deal it was that I had all this going on. But as a kid, it just seemed like that was just my childhood. It was so normal.
Right. It's just part of your, that's amazing.
And my brothers didn't treat me different. Like, we didn't.
Are they older?
Yeah.
Okay.
But like, our lives did not revolve around this. It was just like, that was just part of it. So I didn't know this was weird.
Okay. So when does the jolly fat girl? Now you also say you were illiterate. Like, what?
I was illiterate. So I missed so much school from first grade to about seventh grade. And for some reason, they just kept passing me. Like, even though I was like in school for like 2 weeks out of third grade.
Sounds like New York, if you
ask
me.
They just like public school, right? They're right. Like, eh, she's fine. She's cute. Let's pass her. You know? Yeah. And then I had developed all these, so I was illiterate, but I had developed all these other skills to get by. So people did not know that I couldn't read until I was in about 11th grade and I sat down for the PSATs, which was at a 1600 at the time. I think now it's changed, but I got like a 2. Like, I couldn't even spell my name. Like, it was just a mess. And that's when they realized I was 16. I was on a fourth grade reading level.
Wow.
And so that's when it came out that I was illiterate. And then they spent the next year, like, not the school. We got private lessons, you know, outside the school. Because, again, the school still was like, yeah, she's fine. Yeah. So,
right.
So then we got reading lessons outside of the school and caught me up.
And you caught up how quick, like, within a year?
So then, like, 6 months later, I sat down for the SATs and I got a 1280 out of 16. Like, I just couldn't read. So they taught me how to read. I mean, I had like 800 learning disabilities. I was dyslexic and I had auditory delay reaction. Like, I had all these learning disabilities. But once I learned how to read, then, you know, I was pretty caught up.
All right. Now, with respect to the leg braces and all of that, when do those come off? And when what's your, like, prognosis in life now with regard to that?
Okay. So the leg braces I wore from first, second, third grade. Then fourth grade was the first of 5 hip surgeries. And those hip surgeries span between fourth grade and seventh grade. Then, I've been fine. I eventually will need a double knee and hip replacements. But they were like, oh, you're going to need it when you're 18. And they're like, oh, you're going to need it when you're 25. I'm now 31 and I'm still,
you're getting checked. You work out all the time.
I work out all the time. Yeah. I mean, I will need double knee and hip replacements, but
won't we all?
Yeah. Everybody. I just may need it a little earlier than everyone else.
Everything.
But that's
we're going to need.
Yeah.
Who knows? I don't know. All I know is everybody I know that's, you know, getting on in years, it's a knee, something pops.
Yeah.
Everything
exactly.
goes.
And the more I feel like I could push it off, the more like science has been on our side with like quicker. Like, if I had to get double knee and hip replacements back when I was 18, it was like a year and a half recovery. Now you get double knee and hip replacements, it's like 6 months recovery, you know?
Yeah, if and you're out push, like yeah. the next day. They don't
exactly.
even want you taking up bed space.
So if I could just keep this off for like another 5-10 years, like by then I'll be like, you know, a pill. I'll be fine.
Yeah, take the pill for the knee. Yeah. I hope that happens.
I think it's going to just keep getting better and easier.
I hope so too.
Yeah.
Now you are a very positive person.
And I think so.
How does that translate? When does comedy enter the fold?
Okay. So I majored in acting in college. I always knew I wanted to be an actor from like 6 years old. You know, I was out of school at the time. I was watching sitcoms and I knew I wanted to do that. I wanted to be like Fran Drescher and Roseanne and Ellen. Like, I wanted to do that.
Right. So those were your influences.
Yeah. Because I was in hospital. Because I wasn't in school. I was just watching sitcoms all day and all night. Like, I didn't have a curfew bedtime because I wasn't going to school the next day.
And your absolute favorite was?
sitcom?
Well, no, your role model, I suppose.
Well, career-wise, like, I really want Ellen's, like, do a sitcom, a few movies, have your own talk show.
Right.
But that's as an adult performer.
Right.
But growing up, I love Lucille Ball. Like, I was 7 and 6, like, just, like, watching these episodes over and over and over again and studying her and, like, you know.
Right.
And I didn't know exactly what I was studying, but I just found her fascinating
Yes, I agree. And yeah. I'm born on her birthday, by the way.
Are you?
Yes, I know. It's crazy. Not the same year, obviously. So sick and crazy. All right, so you're growing, yeah. You're watching these things, and you major in it.
Yeah, so I knew I wanted to be an actress, so I majored in it. And then after college, I was being an actress, but it wasn't working. You know, like, I was personal training, you know. And so then about 6 years ago, I called my dad, who's an accountant, crying, being like, I'm not going to make it. I haven't had an acting job since I graduated college. And he was like, why don't you try stand-up? And I was like, are you stupid? I was like, that's the hardest form of performing
so
ever.
You said to your father?
Yeah. Well, if someone says be a stand-up and you've never told a joke in your life, you know, it's crazy.
It is nuts.
But he's like, just try it. He's like, I think Caroline's on Broadway does a comedy class. I'll pay for it. Just try it. And then I tried it. And within like 3 months, I was booking like paid gigs and got past at Caroline's really fast and got past at Broadway really fast. And everything just kind of snowballed from there.
Yeah. What is that?
I don't know.
What is that chutzpah? The Robin Shaw?
I don't know. Just really, he was right. Stand-up was like the right door for me.
He was right. Now, just for a second, let's talk about your dad. It was Father's Day.
Every father, constantly I always bring it up to him, like, he could have been like, because at the time I was dating this really rich guy, he could have been like, you know what, let's give up on the acting, get married, let's start your life, be an adult. Instead, he said, be a comic, and now I'm fucked in this awful career.
Yeah, you're fucked, and you are not even remotely an adult when you're in this
career. You know, like, he had such a chance at that moment to make my life so much simpler, and instead he said, try comedy, you know. So I bring this up to him often.
So out of the gate, though, he's been super supportive. Your mom also?
So supportive.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Now, all right. I was listening to this I mean, this is so ridiculous. I was listening to this podcast you did with Emma, who I love. She calls you a video vixen now.
Well, that's because I was in the rap video by ASAP Rocky.
Yes, you're, yeah.
That's why she calls me that.
Yeah, it's very cute. but you it was like about you're talking about your periods, which I didn't know if I knew that you could talk about your periods and have a great successful podcast doing so, would have done that like 20 years ago. But anyway, you mentioned that you were 6 years old, I guess being in the house, you had some, you know, you're stuck there.
Yeah.
Right. You found your parents' porn?
Yep.
That would have been the start of a comedy career, perhaps at six, or serious therapy at that point.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I was introduced to porn really early because I found porn in their room. I found porn in my brother's room. You know, it was just porn all over.
It's porn all over the house.
I didn't know what I was watching. Like, I wasn't.
No wonder everybody was so happy.
Exactly.
All the time. Hell.
Like, my family doesn't talk about sex, like, because, you know, like, we don't, like, I'm never like, hey, you're
too busy watching.
Yeah, exactly. But we all are very fine with sex. We just don't talk about it.
Okay, you're all fine. But you don't see, now my dad will talk about sex, which is really uncomfortable for a man that's like, you know, he's well into his 80s.
Yeah.
And he's like, you getting any? I'm like, Dad, you know, like, really? Is that appropriate?
My parents would never.
What do you think?
I'd feel so awkward.
It's so weird.
Yeah.
I want you to be happy. Thank you, Dad. All right. So you find the porn.
Find porn.
And, all right. that, I mean, not for nothing. Now my New York comes in. Not for nothing. Uh-huh. That didn't, you were, you know, I mean, you're six. There's only so much you could process.
Yeah, I remember thinking it was funny. I didn't know it was sex. Like, when I was watching it, I thought it was like a really funny video. I knew it was bad. Like, I knew I wasn't supposed to be watching this. It was in like her drawer that we're not supposed to go
into.
You're
not supposed to go into.
So I knew I wasn't supposed to watch it. And I know people are not supposed to be naked doing things like that. But to me, it just seemed like a funny. Like, I wasn't processing that it was sex because I didn't know of sex.
Okay, well, it obviously was sort of straight up normal stuff.
Yeah, I remember it was normal stuff.
It wasn't like people dressed in leather.
No, it was like in a woman's like gym in her home.
Wow, that is really banal.
Yeah. And then like a guy like coming over and having sex with her in the gym.
Yeah, let me help you with those squats.
Yeah.
I don't know why I gotta give him that. Hey, let me help you. All right, that's ridiculous. Let's get back to the comedy. All right, so you're in New York, you get passed pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And you just move through the ranks. What's the first real taste of, you know, I'm really onto something here?
Well, I took everything and anything when I first started. And I was about like 3 months in, I was doing a show at the back of a fondue restaurant. Like,
there's a fondue restaurant?
On Long Island.
Okay.
And this is when I was living on Long Island for the first 2 years of stand-up. I was still on Long Island. And so then I was doing it, and then there was a guy there who books private events. And so then he's like, do you do private events? I was like, sure. He's like, how much time you could do? I was like, anything you want. Meanwhile, I was like three months in, I could probably do maybe 6 minutes, you know?
Okay.
So then he's like, okay, I book private events. I'd love to start using you to do these events. They usually have to 45 minutes to an hour.
That's a long time.
For someone who's like 3 months in, guys, that's impossible, right?
Yeah, I can't even imagine.
But I said, okay, you know?
Right.
Because like, what do I care? I'll do it, you know? And I remember my first gig was in Massachusetts. It was like, you know, these private events, for those who don't know, that's where your comics make money. The clubs pay you like $25. But
right.
You do these private events and it's big money. So, of course, I said yes. And I went, and I don't know how I did it, but I did 45 minutes for this private event. And then he got good feedback, which was crazy because looking back, I don't even know what I talked about for 45 minutes. And then he just started using me all the time. So I really lucked out. This doesn't happen for a lot of people. But I was getting opportunity to do 45-minute sets, hour sets, when I was just starting. Yeah. So I was creating material like crazy when I first started.
That does not happen whatsoever. That doesn't happen. And there aren't many people that could handle 45 minutes.
I do think having the acting background and the storytelling background helped me because I kind of just went into these long stories that had punchlines.
That makes sense.
You know.
Like I just all of a sudden, like I was like a dog with the like one ear just went up. Yes, of course. That makes perfect sense how that would work. And I guess your ability, because you have a natural sort of gift of gab kind of thing.
And improv. Like, so I could talk to the audience for 10 minutes and just talk, and they think this is part of my act.
Right. And you could just, you know, get whatever you needed from them.
Right. Exactly.
And he's still working you today, this particular...
We still work together. It's 6, 5, well, 5.5 years now.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Now, when you do these events for him, and again, this isn't customary for anybody listening that wants a career in stand-up. This doesn't happen often. You're sort of, meteoric rise, you know, through the ranks. Because it just doesn't really, really happen unless you have... that spark, which you do, right?
Right, and luck. I mean, like, the fact that he was at that fondue restaurant, the fact that, I mean, the whole thing was so random that he even saw me, that he even was like, yeah, this person would be good for private events, you know?
And you're like, how old then? You're like in your mid-20s?
I'm 31 now, so I was 25.
25.
I was just started.
Yeah.
It was just luck, timing, and although I would only, again, I repeat myself, but I'd only been in stand-up for 3 months, but I'd been an actress forever. I was a trained actress. I knew to stand on stage and improv. Well, I wasn't improvising. I had stories that I was set, you know, but I had that background to carry me through.
You did. So you did, and you have, like I said, like we've talked about already a number of times, like you have a confidence about you and a strength and an ambition that is
mostly fake, but you fake it till
you
make it.
Well, you know what? Yeah. Well, that's one of my favorite expressions, fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
And I don't often do that. You know, sometimes I do wear my heart and my depression on my, here we go again. Okay, so during this time, you're already thin, right? You're thin at this point.
Actually thinner than I am now.
Okay. Now, and but you have you had a fitness podcast, or you still have that?
No, we're not doing it anymore.
Okay, but you had like fitness, the podcast or something like that? Okay. And so you lost a lot of weight.
85 pounds.
And what was, I remember you told me a story a while back with the impetus to really lose that weight. And for anybody struggling, because this is not just about comedy. This is kind of, for me, this is about like your just wherewithal to just get it done. So right.
So in between sophomore and junior year of college, I hit well over 200 pounds. I'm also 4'11". So I know to some people, well over 200 pounds is not crazy. But when you're, you know,
you're a petite girl.
I was like 230. I don't even remember what exactly I was. But that's a lot of weight. And I was just like, it was the first time I just was like, I'd always been like, oh, I want to lose weight, but nothing's ever clicked. And for some reason, it just clicked. And that summer between sophomore and junior year, I was living upstate with my best friend for the summer. And I was like, I want to lose the weight. And I joined like a 24-hour gym because I was embarrassed to go to the gym because I was fat. And for anyone who's overweight, you know, like, it's embarrassing. Like, you'd think it'd be the opposite. Like, oh, I'm overweight. The gym's where I should be. No, it's embarrassing when you don't know how to use the machines and you feel.
Sure,
you
that
know.
Makes sense.
So I joined a 24-hour gym so I could go at 4 in the morning so no one would see me. And because I knew if I didn't go at 4 in the morning, I wouldn't go, I forced myself to go. And that first summer, I lost 30 pounds. It just, like, something clicked at me. I was just, like, ready.
And wasn't there a dress, too?
Yes, yes.
See, I remember.
So me and my girlfriend got dumb jobs that summer, you know, to just stay up in Ithaca, New York. She was working at a dress store, and I was working at, like, a paint your own pottery store. I think I got fired from because I think I was just high every day and not, that's, you know, hilarious. Just painting and not helping customers. But so she worked at a dress store, and when we first got there, there was like this tube top black dress, but the large was too small for me. It wouldn't zip up. And I was like, Jen, I'm gonna lose weight, and at the end of the summer I'm gonna lose 30 pounds, and at the end of the summer I'm gonna fit into this dress. And every day, like at 4 in the morning, I'd work out, shower, go to and try on the dress. And every day I could always like go a little bit more up, a little like the zipper, right. And then it was like 2 days before I left to go back to college, you know, for junior year, and I go to the gym, I lose the 30 pounds. I'm like so excited. And so I go to the dress store to get, see if the, because like the date, like 2 days before, the dress had finally zipped up. So I was like, I'm going to buy the dress. I wanted, you know,
right.
But I wanted to lose the 30 pounds as like the award.
Sure.
So I lose the 30 pounds. I go to the dress store, and the one large was sold morning.
Are they insane?
I was so upset.
They didn't set one aside for you?
Every day. So I was so upset. So we go back to the apartment, and Jen's like, Robin, it's just, like, who cares? You lost 30 pounds. We'll just go out and celebrate. And I was like so bummed because that dress was like my goal, you know?
Yes.
And she's like, just get dressed. Let's go. And so I was like, fine. I opened the closet, and there was the dress.
Aww.
Jen had bought it that day as like a congratulations.
All right. So. I like the story. Yeah. It's like I was on that ride with you.
I
like,
know.
That sucks so
bad.
And
I always talk about it, like I've lost another 50 pounds after that, but that was like the big thing of like feeling pretty in a dress for like the first time in my life. From going to leg braces to fat, I had never felt like pretty before. So that was like the first time in that dress, like going out that night, that I was like, I'm pretty. You are.
First of all, I mean, I feel like I'm an attractive woman. And I think
we do look like sisters.
Right? Don't you think? John, we're looking at Jim the sound guy. Yeah,
we do look like sisters.
Definitely. I could be your mom though.
No, you can.
Yeah, I could.
I don't know how old you are, but you don't look like you could be my mom.
All right, I'm never saying that again.
No, I think we look like sisters.
But me, yeah, we do.
Yeah,
I'm keeping it at that. But that's the see. But this is the thing. Since day one, since I met you, since the very first time at Greenwich Village Comedy Club, I believe it was that the spark in you, the sort of the drive in you, and that this is the, and you also do, okay, so you're doing these things. All right, I'm glad we know the story, because I do feel, if you, like they say, if you build it like from Field of Dreams, if you build it, he will come, right?
Right.
So the dress is like your Field of Dreams.
Yeah.
You know, a new bedspread is my Field of Dreams.
I get new sheets,
grown,
a man
I'm getting
will
grown.
Come.
Exactly. I'll put some flowers in there or something. No, I'm kidding. But that's the thing about you. And so So you're doing these things and you're making these goals for yourself. Did you have these goals along with comedy? Did you say, I'm going to try this and then this and let's see what happens with that? I mean, I know you lucked into the situation where this guy is booking you to do private events. What were your stand-up goals? And let me ask you, do you treat your stand-up like you do your workout? Because do you have a time that you get up? Do you start writing at a certain time? So this is kind of like a threefold question.
Right. I definitely am not where I want to be. I thought I'd be further along. Like, I was like, all right, you know, in 2 years I'll be on a sitcom, and then in 4 years I'll have my own sitcom. Like, I had all these like plans for my career, and it definitely did not happen as fast. It's not happening as fast as I want it, but I think that's why I work so hard is because I'm not happy with where I am. Do you know what I mean?
Like, I get it.
You know, I think if I was like, all right, I'm happy where I am, I wouldn't be going out every night and writing hours every day. You know, I
right?
Think,
but
you know,
who's happy where they are? I mean, on any given on any given day, we're like, I could be like happy in the moment. But,
yeah.
You know, there's always a part like I wish this was happening a little bit faster.
Yeah.
Or, you know, we are where we are. So.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm not. I want to be further along
yes.
than I am, but I do work. I mean, I'm not a big sleeper. Like, I don't sleep a lot.
Neither.
Yeah. So you know, we work nights. We perform pretty much every night, and then so we don't go. And then do you know the app Periscope, which is the live streaming?
I was going to ask you about that because I was a non-periscopy person, and now all of a sudden I'm like coming around to the possibilities of what it can
it's
do.
It's been great.
I know that happens with me. Yeah, I know. You did it.
It's probably the biggest thing in my career that's helped me so far.
All right, so tell me what, okay, with Periscope,
yeah.
with respect to Periscope, I saw that you did this 24-hour Periscope-a-thon
yeah.
to raise money for Ronald McDonald
yeah.
House, which is an amazing thing. Was that the first Periscope for
no,
it? Okay,
no,
you had
no.
done many at this point.
Yeah, yeah. I joined Periscope 10 months ago, and for those who don't know what it is, it's a live streaming app, so on your phone. So you just press broadcast, and you're live, and people from around the world can watch you, and they can type, kind of like a chat room, while you're broadcasting, so you could interact with people. So, and if anyone wants to follow me, it's at Robin Shaw. And I go on I'm on 3 times a day. But when I first started, I go on and just talk to them. Then I started doing characters, you know, and developing characters on there and doing different sketches on there. And then one day, one of my characters, her name is Hope Paula Vag. So people just call her HPV because that's her initial.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that.
She was like, she's like a mess, right, of a woman. And she was painting with crayons and kidding around. I was like, hey, guys, I'm going to sell these two paintings. I'm going to sell it for 6 cents, right? Penny. It's like kidding around, you
right.
know, not thinking anyone would buy it. And then someone's like, $10, I'll buy it. And someone's like, $30, $50. So one crayons went for $180.
What?
And the other one went for $100.
Legit.
And I was like, wait, are you guys for real? And they're like, yeah, we'll send the money right now through PayPal. And then I was like, all right. I was like, I can't keep that money. I feel weird since this is crayons. I said, I'll donate it, if you guys are okay, to the Ronald McDonald House. And I was like, I'll throw in the $20 to make it an even $300. So they PayPal'd it. And then we went right over the next day on Periscope, and I handed in the check to Ronald McDonald House. And then like a month later, I was like, huh, I wonder if we could raise even more money. So that character that I'm talking about always wears underwear on the outside of her clothes, and I always have different things written on it. So I auctioned off all of them plus two more paintings, and we raised $700.
Wait, you auctioned off the
underwear she wears and two new
paintings. Seems a little odd for Ronald McDonald.
Yeah,
but
right. But I'm doing this all on Periscope,
okay.
right? Yeah, it's nothing to do with the Ronald McDonald. It's just that I give the money.
Okay.
So then we raised $700. So now we're up yeah. to $1,100. And then I was like, hey, guys, no one had ever done 24-hour broadcast before, right? So I was like, guys, wow.
Other than Jerry Lewis.
Right, but on Periscope.
Right,
I was like, and at this point, I started building a following on Periscope. So I was like, guys, why don't we do I will broadcast for 24 hours. At that point, I had like nine. Now I have 15 characters I do, but I had like 8 or 9 at the time. I was like, all 9 characters will appear. We'll do auctions. You could call in and donate. You can call in and speak to a character, like all these things. And then that 24 hours, we raised $6,000. And then we just did another one where we did, and we always broadcast me handing in the checks also at Ronald McDonald. They know us now, you know.
Okay.
And so in total, me and my followers have raised over $10,000 for the Ronald McDonald.
And this is over the course of how many months or a year at this point?
No, 6 months. Well, I've been on Periscope for 10, but we've been doing these fundraisers for 6 months.
6 months.
We only did $10,000. Yeah, we did it four times. So.
You've never once wanted to raise your rent with them.
I know, right? I can't.
Rent for a year.
I know. So this manager was interested in me, right? And she was like, I don't understand why you're giving this money away. And I was like, it's not just, I'm giving it to sick kids. I'm not just
really? What manager is that?
I ended up not working with her because I was like, we obviously don't have the same mindset here. If you want me to keep the money that obviously should go.
And maybe gives 10% to you for the nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. So I was like, I don't think so. But anyway, Periscope has been so good for me. I sidetracked with the Ronald McDonald's House. But, you know, now I'm performing all over the country. Well, world. I just came back from Australia. And it's people from Periscope buying the tickets.
Okay. So, yeah, tell me about, now you were in Australia for how many weeks?
Well, I was,
it felt like a, well, like
it was
2 weeks.
It was a 1 week tour. I did 6 venues in 1 week.
Okay.
But then I stayed in, it was a free trip. So I was like, can you make my returning flight a week later? And then I took a week to travel.
So you were there 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Okay. So, all right. So how did that evolve? How did the Australian tour or?
Again, freaking luck. This guy who's really big in media there was in New York and happened to go to Caroline's the night I was headlining. And so
now, was this for the women's show, the ladies show, or was something else?
I don't remember. I was either, it could have been, I don't remember. And this was about a year and a half ago or 2 years, like, yeah, a while ago. And after the show, he's with his wife and he's like, you know, I'm in TV and newspaper in Australia. If I put together a tour and flew you out and paid for the visa and everything, would you come? And I was like, yeah, whatever. Who takes that seriously? And then 6 months later, he contacts me. He's like, hey, I've been speaking to venues. I want to get you out here. And then before I knew it, there was a contract in front of me, and the whole thing happened, and we did it.
And it happened, and you not only Periscoped it, you Snapchatted it.
I'm all over social media.
I know, you are, which is great. Yeah. I mean, that's what you have to do. It really is. So let's talk about that, too. And I want to know more about the trip. First, let's talk about the trip a little bit. What was the experience like? And
it was amazing. It was doing an hour every night, 6 nights in a row. I got so much stronger. Comedy, there's no way to get good except doing it. I don't care how much you write. I don't care how much you listen to stand up. Unless you're on the stage doing it, there's no way to get good, you know.
No way to get good. You just have to be on.
To do it. There's some people who are like, I write 10 hours every day. I don't care. Unless you're up there working it, it doesn't matter, I feel like.
And who else was on this tour for you?
I had a opener, that like an Australian comic opener for me.
A male or female? Just
male.
Okay.
It was okay. It was fine.
Oh my God.
There's some comics, especially older male comics who have not gotten with the times, that young female comics could be just as funny as men. Actually funnier that they're headlining. So it was one of those situations
where she's headlining.
She and Why younger.
Why is she headlining?
Yeah. So he had definitely had, he was not the nicest to me.
I see.
Yeah. But besides that, the tour was amazing.
Did you pick up the Australian accent?
No, not
I'm
at
surprised
all.
That you didn't, you know, with all the
I
characters.
I suck at accents.
I'm not like, hi, Jaina.
But, oh, that accent is so sexy. Even like the ugliest, grossest men in Australia are hot when they talk.
Yeah, it's well. I remember I dated an Australian man, and I remember he called me. He had long moved, and somebody told me he got married, and I don't know how I got this. This is when people actually had like machines.
Yeah,
my machine picked up, and it was like, "Hey, Jaina, this is. I'm not going to say his name. I just want you to know I did get married." Is that a good? Oh. All right. Well, good for her.
Oh my God, that accent is so sexy.
Not when I do it.
I was like, I don't know if that's actually an Australian accent, Gina, but it was close.
I don't know what that is. All right, so you were there, and did you explored, and did you swim with dolphins
Well, yeah, because then I went to the Great Barrier Reef, and I went snorkeling and helmet diving. That's kind of like snorkeling, but you're wearing like a helmet that looks like an astronaut helmet.
Oh, that thing.
Yeah, and you're like 12 feet under. underwater and with all these crazy fish and on the Barrier Reef. It was amazing.
Did you ever see this in your mind's eye that you would be doing things like
no,
this?
No, I tell you, I wanted to be a sitcom actress. I never in my craziest imagination thought people would pay for me to go to other countries to perform like that. Like I, even still now, I'm like, wait, you want me even now? Because I'm doing a summer tour around the country again because of Periscope. But I'm like, wait, you want me to come? Because I still don't feel like I'm a comic. I still feel like I'm an actress using comedy.
Well, great.
Yeah, but the acting thing's still not happening.
That's funny. Let me, you know, just for some other reason, I'm an actress too. That's what I studied first and foremost. So to me, the stand-up is a facilitator to what I hope to do even still as far as acting. Do you still feel that acting, I mean, whether it's a sitcom, that's where you, like films and things like that.
Yeah,
that, that's
like
where you
TV, film, and I still like...
You're going to be on TV, I mean, like,
that's what
in
I,
that way. You will
I mean, that's what I want, what pays the bills right now and what keeps me working is stand-up.
Right.
So, like,
for
when people,
now.
You know, people are like, what do? I don't say I'm an actress. I say I'm a comedian because... I'm not acting. I know I'm an actress, but no one else gives a shit. They're like, no, you're a comic.
You're a comic.
Yeah, so I just... You know.
Yeah. When you tell people you're a comic, do you get what are the typical responses? I know mine are like, oh, really? Either it's like, oh, that's cool.
No, they're like, oh, tell me a joke.
Well, that is, yes.
I hate when people say that.
Every comic hates that because I don't tell jokey jokes.
Yeah. And also, we're like... at a memorial service, like, you know, like no, I'm not come to a show, then I'll tell you a joke, you know.
Is the private side of Robin Shaw sensitive?
Yeah, I think I'm sensitive. Am I not sensitive in
no
public?
I don't mean it.
You're like a heartless bitch in public, Robin.
No,
like, are you a cunt like this when you're home alone?
I just lost my headphones. Oh my god. No, you know what I mean. I mean, like, because I find that, like, the private side of me is, like, because I think we're a lot alike.
Yeah.
So I'm, like, sort of like this, you know, like, I'm sort of out there and, like, this persona is out there in the comedy world. And then I'm, like, you know.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely, like, especially in relationships, I'm much more, like, reserved and romantic, you know, like I'm not as like on stage.
I mean.
Yeah, I'm like, so I blow this guy in an alleyway, but then like really, I'm not. He's not an alleyway.
I was gonna
in
say
a supermarket maybe, but not in an alleyway.
Because I love jokes where you blow people in alleyways. That's excellent. All right, so Periscope's been very helpful.
They're huge.
Now, what about the characters? Because you were, I did notice that. How did these characters evolve?
I just one day came on Periscope as that character, HPV, who's still the most popular. I mean, I now have 15 characters. She's still the most popular. Just came on as her and did like a little strip tease.
Did you always have characters?
No, I never did a character a day in my life. And people would always be like, oh, you should do Saturday Night Live. And I was like, I don't do characters. And now all I do, like, now I do all characters. And they're like, these characters are so well developed that
they
now
are.
When I go on Periscope, I don't have to say, hi, I'm Dar. They just go, oh, Dar's here. Hey, Dar. Hi. And they talk to these characters as they're real people because I've developed them so fully on this.
Are they based on people that you know, though?
No.
Or you just came out of your imagination?
No, it's just...
Do you
just
make their outfits? What's up with that?
Yeah, I just...
What was that green thing she had? First of all, if you go to robinshaw.com, I'll say it again.
The alligator?
Was that a... Yeah, what was all... Did you make that?
Yeah.
What?
So my followers like to send me gifts, right? And I do this segment called Packages and Shit, where they send me stuff and then I open it up on Periscope, and it's usually weird
you
shit.
You're a genius. Okay.
But it's weird shit, like they send me blow up dolls and, you know, or they do send like a lot. They're great in the sense that they'll send stuff for the character so that I'm not spending, I already do spend so much money on Periscope, but like they'll send me, like, you know, if there's a new character, like I just started a new character named Bam Bam, who's like a biker guy, right? And like within the next day or two, someone sent me, you know, a switchblade knife and a bandana. Like they send gifts for the characters, knowing that like they're watching these characters.
Do you have a P.O. box for this?
I have a P.O. box, yeah. I'm not having
people
around the world just coming to my house. Oh, there are some crazies. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, there are definitely some crazies. But So anyway, one of the things is they've noticed that, like, I use duct tape a lot, like, to fix it things. Like, I'm really, yeah, I don't like to spend money. So, like, if something breaks, I just duct tape it. Or I once had a hole in my shirt, so I just put duct tape on it instead of changing my shirt. Like, come on,
that's hilarious.
Alive.
That's what my father would do.
So now I do these duct tape challenges. Like, I made a, and we see if I can make things out of duct tape. Like, I made a duct tape ladder. I made a, like, and to climb up into my loft bed, I did a duct tape swing. And
you did?
I make these things out of duct tape live on Periscope, and we see if the challenge will work. And most do, some don't. But that one, I covered my entire body in duct tape and to make myself look like an alligator. There is really no good reason for this except for entertainment purposes.
I love it. So, but there's green duct tape?
Yeah. Oh, so they all now send me duct tape. So now I now own like 40 rolls of duct tape in every color possible.
Now, let's talk about what you own in your home and because, I mean, people will see it on Periscope.
Yeah.
Because, all right, what I recently saw, it's a tiny place.
It's the smallest apartment in New York City.
I mean, I really think it is.
It's like the size of this room.
I have, okay, because I have a, for those listening, I have a railroad apartment, and we do this in the red room. I'm surprised we're not Periscoping this now.
Let's Periscope it.
No one will, we can Periscope it for a second just to say hi. Let's do that.
Okay.
But the red room here in my apartment, try not to get the laundry bag. That's so hot, ladies and gentlemen. I guess this room is probably what, Jim, 10 by 14? 10 by.
It's 10 by
10. I think each room in my apartment is 10 by 10, except maybe the back bedroom is probably like 10 by 8. Fits a full size mattress and a little.
I think my apartment is 9 feet by 14 feet. The whole thing. There's no kitchen.
I don't even think that should be legal to rent.
I don't think so either.
Is it?
What should I title this? What's the name
of
the podcast?
Let's call it
Live on the Podcast.
Live on the Red Light Podcast.
It's the red light.
So, okay, this is
live.
She's typing it in. Live on. So this won't be live to the listeners of WROM Radio in Detroit or any of you that will pick us up on the internet, on iTunes. But we're just going to... Are we on now?
Okay, so we just went live.
So we went live. We're live now. This is the Red Light Podcast Redux. I'm Gina Savage. I'm sitting here with Robin Shaw. We're not going to do this too long.
Hold on. We'll just do it for a second.
We're going to just do it
I
for
could
a
hold
second.
It. I could hold
She's
it.
Hold, it's
hey, wait,
fine.
Next, now there's more people in the room. So say what the name
okay,
of this
so
podcast
we're going to do this again. This is the Red Light.
sorry, people in Detroit.
Sorry,
it's over. It's not about you anymore.
Like, yeah, it's worldwide. This is the Red Light Podcast Redux. And I am your host, Gina Savage. Also, Ricky Sofer, when she's in town, a comedian, does the podcast with me. But I'm here today with Robin Shaw, who you guys know. Periscope people,
right? Can people not in Detroit listen to this?
This is worldwide.
This
airs, it is worldwide.
Oh, okay.
And then the subscribers can pick it up on iTunes at the Red Light Podcast Redux, and then we're also on Podomatic. So, you know, a lot of people can hear it and get to know you because they're not, if we're live now, they're not hearing, you know, all about Robin Shaw,
right.
But they will hear all about Robin Shaw when they check us out on iTunes. So
okay.
What's happening in the world of
so people
Periscope.
On Periscope, I was just telling everyone in Detroit and Gina here how much I love Periscope, right?
Yes, she loves it. And she was telling me about the characters that she does and the alligator and duct tape. I mean, I had no idea. I have duct tape now. I'm going to try to figure out some fun uses
for it. So much you could do with duct tape. You could do anything and everything with duct
tape. I have duct tape and handcuffs.
Someone right now, Vaughn is saying, tell Robin to come to Detroit.
All
see,
right.
Detroit, they want me to come.
See,
we got to get
do.
Me to Detroit.
We do. Well, I mean, the folks over at WROM Radio, they probably have some comedy connections out there. And we can work that out. Maybe we should both go.
Go. I would love that.
I have like 8 minutes. So you have 45. That's perfect.
Perfect. All right. Should I sign off?
You can sign off. We're good there. Thanks, Periscope.
Bye, Periscope. So that's Periscope.
That's awesome. So that's all right. So that's good. And so all these characters, all the characters, we get back to the characters.
Yeah.
They evolved just simply because of your involvement with Periscope. You're
yeah.
like, okay, it's me, but I can be me and so many. And all of them were just derived from your imagination.
Yeah. It's really funny. I did a t-shirt contest with them where they all could design t-shirts for me to sell on my website. And they all voted on the t-shirts. Like people would, like I had my followers design t-shirts and then I made a page of everyone's design and then they voted on the five best and the five best went on my website that you could buy. So
now your followers, so you have like your Twitter followers, I think you have like 4,000 something followers. Or
Periscope's
like,
15,000.
It's 15,000.
Yeah.
How quickly did that?
Over the 10 months.
Over 10 months.
But 15,000. The first 6 months was so slow. The first 6 months I only had like maybe 2,000.
Okay.
And then in the last 6 months, it's just been
going It's extraordinary.
Fast. Yeah. And they love the characters. Like the characters have been like huge for it.
Okay. That's great. Now tell me about now you perform at Broadway Comedy Club, you do, and Greenwich Village Comedy Club. You also have your own show at Caroline's. How did that, and you know, it's funny, I'm going to say this as a woman in comedy. People always say, so-and-so has a woman show, and so-and-so has a woman show, and and of course, you know that I have Broadly Funny, which is a woman show, and people are always like, well, don't you feel there's a competition? No, I don't think there's a competition.
Yeah,
I don't even believe in the competitive.
No, there's 800 million guy shows. Like, I don't even.
It's not even a thing. It's like, no. I think the more you can work,
when more women can work. Also, yours is a little different because you get, I don't really get to say in my, mine is really Caroline's show with my name attached to it.
Is it now?
Yeah, no, it is. I don't get to book the comics or that's all their say. Or I wanted to give away free tickets. They don't let me do that. It's my name's on it, and I'm so appreciative. I can't say that enough. I'm so appreciative that they gave me the show. But,
I'm appreciative for you.
Thank you. But, I mean, it's not really my they own it. Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
They book it.
They also own it. Like, I can't be like, I'm moving Ladies Night with Robin Shaw to Broadway Comedy Club because it's not mine. It's theirs.
I see. So it could be Ladies Night with whoever at
some
point.
I could just be like, exactly.
Kind of like how Saturday Night Live is with the characters, because you don't even know, I think a lot of the times you don't own the character that you necessarily have created somehow.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Everyone's got you by the balls.
It's so true.
What the hell?
So, but I mean, I can't say that enough. I'm appreciative. I'm appreciative.
Yes, we're all appreciative. Every little thing we have in comedy and life, we are on our knees with appreciation.
Yeah. On our knees is the important part of that sentence.
You know what I'm going to talk about? I've never compromised, and clearly it's gotten me nowhere. I've never compromised
me
anything.
Neither.
I didn't do any of the things. You know, I just, whatever I've done in comedy and life, it's like basically scratching teeth and nails. There's no bitterness when I say this. I guess there's a film about a club that I was involved with, right? Boston Comedy Club.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, why did anybody, I mean, I was a part of that club. Like, I'd like to, someone had asked me about pictures that I, did I have pictures from that time period? And I have tons of them, but I'm like, can I just sit in the back while we film ones? I would have liked to have been a part of that just for the kitsch factor. And but there's so many things I feel like I still till this day, and I don't know. And you're new. You're essentially, but like even I'm 20 years in this, and sometimes I'm like, do I really have to ask? Do I have to ask? I guess, and yes, the answer is yes.
Yeah.
I constantly have to ask because it's never necessarily in the forefront of people's minds.
It's true. There's nothing. Nothing's handed to you in this career. You have to be so pushy.
Absolutely.
No, there's like a fine line though. You can't be too pushy. You have to be pushy. Like, you can't annoy them where they are like, oh, Robin's so annoying. But you have to be in their face.
Right. And also, and I'll just say this, if you've had dealings with male comedians or writers and you've sort of nixed their advances in a certain way, then they may not be inclined to work with you. And it's such a double-edged sword for women in this business, and I and for men too, because like I've dealt with men that I've liked.
For
it's
women,
far
it's,
worse. But what, because we have a few minutes. What do you think are the what could you say to women in comedy as far as how they can proceed in this business? What do you think? your...
Well, on the whole thing with the guys thing, what helped me a lot was up until 6 months ago, I was had a boyfriend my entire time in comedy.
You did.
Like going into stand up, I was with my ex, and we were together for 6 years. So up until 6 months ago, because we started dating 6 months before I went into stand up, and then we broke up.
I remember.
Yeah, we were together. So it actually really helped because then anytime like someone kind of hit on me, I'm like, oh, I would, but I have a boyfriend.
Right,
you know,
right,
like
right.
So that would actually really helped. I actually wish I never made it public that I broke up with him because it was such a good out for things. Like, you know, because even now sometimes like a male comic or a booker could hit on me and I'm just like, oh, fuck, you know, and
how
like
do
I don't
get out of this now.
Exactly.
Just keep saying it.
The only thing I could say is sleeping with someone's not going to get you further. Like ultimately, it's are you funny? Do you work hard? And do people like you? That's like how you get forward. It's if you blow someone, you're not the only person blowing them. Do you know what I mean? Like if a booker's like, oh, if you give, you know, then you're not the only person. So it's not going to help you. You may get a spot, but you won't become famous.
Yeah, you might get 10 minutes.
Yeah,
I'm kidding. I'm so kidding.
No, but like, no, you know, Chelsea Handler jokes that she like slept with whatever. But the thing is, Chelsea Handler also works really hard and is really funny.
She's really funny.
Yeah, you know, same with a lot of female comics will joke about that. But the ones that actually make it are the ones that are really funny and work hard. And I think that there's no shortcut in this business except work hard
All right.
and be funny.
To that end, so when you is there a method to how you start your day? I mean, because I know you don't sleep and neither do I.
Right.
So, what happens? How does Robin Shaw wake up?
Okay, well, it's different now because now when I wake up, I do a morning coffee talk episode on Periscope where I didn't used to do that. I used to just wake up, go to the gym, and start writing.
Do you do that at a certain time every day?
No, it's usually around 9 or 10.
Okay, so that's morning coffee talk with Robin Shaw.
Yes. Then I will...
How long is that?
Usually an hour.
You talk for an hour on Periscope?
Yeah.
And people respond.
Yeah, people, I'm like talking with them. Sometimes I change it up. Like I'll do bitch therapy where people could just bitch and I'll agree with them, whatever they want. You know, I'll do something with duct tape. I'll take them to the park. We'll do a bunch of different things.
Okay.
But it's usually called coffee talk.
Okay.
And then I was writing for the WWE network this past year. So then usually I then start writing. During the day, I mostly write. And then late afternoon, I go back on Periscope, do another either packages and shit, a character, something.
Right.
And I go to my shows and then I come home and then I do a late night Periscope.
So
I do like three things a day.
So you are socially committed all day long.
And then I do my shows at night and I write during the day. I have no social life. All I do is write, Periscope, and perform.
Right.
That's
which
it.
You have no social life, but your life is social.
Exactly.
It's amazing.
It's kind of social. I'm doing Periscope where I'm the only person in the room, and I do stand up where I'm the only one talking on stage. So it's super social. Yeah. But it's it's a really one man talking.
I get it.
You know,
you should
what
have
I mean?
Seen me last night. I was like, I'm gonna do a video. I was gonna do a video, and then I started, and then the more I like, because sometimes I'll play it back, like whatever I'm doing. I'm not Periscope-y.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, I just feel crazy right now. WWE.
Yeah.
So how did that? And we have a few minutes. How did that start? And what's happening with that now?
So they were doing the show called The List on the WWE Network, where it was like a wrestling show where they show wrestling clips and wrestlers, and then like two or three comics would do like funny commentaries and jokes on the clips. The wrestlers just made commentaries, but they put two or three comics in there, like a talking head type show.
And how did you get this?
I got that because they were shooting in New York and they wanted a female comic. So they went to the Caroline's website to see what female comics were in New York that week.
Right.
And I happened to have been headlining that
That's
week.
That's amazing.
I know. And like so many things just happen because you just get lucky. You know what I mean? You're
place,
in the right,
right
place at the right time.
Yeah.
So they called me. They're like, hey, we want you. So they watched my clip online. You know, they watched my Live at Gotham tape. They're like, we saw the Caroline's website. We watched your videos. We want you for this show. We want to book you for 4 episodes. Do you know wrestling? I was like, I love wrestling. I never saw one episode in the day of my life. Whatever it's called, to match.
Right.
So I was like, yeah, I love wrestling. and then they're like, great, we want to book you for 4 episodes. I was like, great. And then they sent me like 200 topics. I had to write jokes for, and I didn't even know what the fuck wrestling was. So I went into like crunch mode and learned everything about wrestling. And then
would you talk to Adam Lucidi?
No, I just, my brother sat me down.
Oh, he did? Okay.
And was like, okay, so there's this universe. Because I really knew nothing. And then from there, I filmed the four episodes and they aired and I did really, I got a lot of air time. And then I get a call from the producer saying, hey, we're doing a new sketch comedy show. We want to hire you as the writer, one of the writers for it, you know? And I was like, you know, I really don't know wrestling. They're like, yeah, no, we like that you know nothing.
That's great.
Because they kind of like just like my comedy take on wrestling as someone who doesn't know wrestling. So I was coming at it with different eyes than everyone else that works there. And so that's what I've been doing this year. Just I've been very involved with the WWE Network.
So are you excited? I mean, now are you a total WWE person? Or are you still kind of... All right.
I mean, sure. Yes, I love them. I love wrestling.
She loves them, and she's appreciative.
I'm very appreciative of the WWE Network. Well, I have to say the WWE Network fans are they are loyal. They are intense.
They are intense.
Like, if you like wrestling, you love wrestling.
Yes, and I mentioned our friend Adam Lucidi before because he's a comic, and he's a huge wrestling fan. So shout out to him just in general because he's a nice dude.
He's on Periscope.
He's on Periscope. The whole world's on Periscope. I gotta do this.
You gotta do it.
All right, we have to wrap up. In closing, you're gonna be traveling this summer.
Yep. If you go to my website, robinshaw.com, there's a schedule of where I'm gonna be all over the country. Detroit. You want Gina and I to come? We're gonna do a.
Make that happen, Detroit. We can do it.
That'd be a really fun show. We really do look like sisters.
We do. And well, there'll be pictures to accompany this.
Right, great. Oh, all you right, look so cute. I don't want to stand next to you.
I'll put a shirt on. I'm naked.
Get ugly and then I'll stand next to you.
I'm naked for the whole podcast. This is Robin. So it's robinshaw.com. Your Twitter?
Everything's at Robin Shaw. Snapchat, Twitter.
And that's Robin with a Y.
RobinShall.
Thank you for being here. It's been
so much fun.
I can't wait to hear, everything that you're up to. We got to go. This has been the Red Light Podcast with Gina Savage. I want to thank WROM radio listeners in Detroit and also Jim Byrne on sound engineering as always. Thank you. We'll be back next week.